Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Welcome to All Sides Weekend. This is a very special edition. This is our monthly arts and culture conversation. And you want to talk arts and culture? I've got the three of them in the studio today, beginning with Janet Chen, who is the executive director of the Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra, with regular concerts in the Southern Theater, regular concerts outdoors in the summer, all kinds of galas to tell us about. If you love music, then you know Janet Chen and Pro Musica. If you don't, you soon will. David Brown is the artistic director, the boss of the Harmony Project, which is one of the most admired ensembles in the country. A lot of that is due to David Brown, and a lot of that is due to his large memberships, people who sing, who get together and perform, and who also work in the community. David will be telling us more about that. And Edward Corrigan is the artistic director of the Short North Stage, and your current show is A Chorus Line, which is running through the 19th of April. Tell me about A Chorus Line.
Well, A Chorus Line is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year, so we're really excited to be producing it. We have this fantastic cast of dancers. It's an amazing story about dancers auditioning for a Broadway show in 1975. And we have this lavish production playing at the Garden Theater right now through the 19th. So excited about it.
There's a refrain in that show, God, I hope I get it. Talk a little bit about that. Talk about really what these characters go through.
Sure. So it's an unusual audition for them because the director has decided to ask them about their lives instead of just their resumes and their dance ability. So through the course of the evening, you get a cross-section of 17 different dancers and how they came to be dancers and how they grew up in studios. It's a fascinating story and sort of an unusual theatrical event. And if you've never seen it before, it's a must-see, and a must-see to bring your kids to or anyone who hasn't experienced it.
Everybody in that show, as I remembered, has to sing, dance, and act.
Yes, there's a triple threat show.
There's nobody who doesn't have to do all those things.
No.
How large is the cast, and where did you find them?
Well, so we always mix three groups of people. We bring in our friends from out of town, from New York City, and house them here and give them the full Columbus experience. And then we have a ton of local professional actors and dancers, and then also our amazing high school interns. All three groups, we have 32 cast members, including all our understudies and swings.
I want to talk more about what's going on at the Short North Stage in the Garden Theater in the Short North, which was brought back a number of years ago by you and your colleagues. And A Chorus Line running now. You have more shows coming. And then there's the Harmony Project, which is an enormous undertaking from our friend David Brown. And we have a little music right now from the Harmony Project, just a bit from the Ohio Theater a number of years ago. And you got to love YouTube, and we all love David Brown. David Brown, tell us, reintroduce us to the Harmony Project for people who don't know.
Sure. So the concept of the Harmony Project is to use music and the arts to bring people together who likely would not intersect, and then to put them to work in the community. So we don't require any musical background, pedigree, training, anything like that. We say if you want to sing, you're welcome to sing as long as there's a spot on the bleachers. And then you earn your way to the performance stage through community service. So the goal is to get people who maybe vote differently, pray differently, live differently, love differently, to be in a room together singing at the same time. That unites them, brings them together, breaks down the walls, and then we employ them out into the community to be the change that they want to see.
What is the range of experience available to people who work, your members who work in the community?
Range of experience of like...
Where do they go? Where do they work?
Oh, so building playgrounds, planting trees, painting community murals, serving meals, simple as, you know, filling up a community supply closet, something that doesn't require a lot of hard work, heavy lifting, all the way to riding cherry pickers 20 feet, 30 feet up into the air, painting murals on the sides of buildings. But the goal is, while they're working together, that they break down their barriers. Harmony's job isn't to change anyone's mind. Our job is just to put you into a situation where harmony can grow and exist.
I can't think of a time that we're all living together that would be more important than it is right now. I'm sure you're getting a flush of members some people need to go somewhere that makes sense.
It's a place to belong.
Yeah.
When in a world where you might not feel like you do right now.
How many performances a year, big public performances, do you do?
So we do, historically, we've done two large performances a year and then maybe some smaller ones. We're kind of shifting that focus a little bit and moving more toward like one really big one in the year and then more smaller experiences for people to make it more accessible.
That is the Harmony Project. Did you begin? This is a national movement, unless I'm wrong, the Harmony Project, or not?
No, this just started here in Columbus in 2009.
And you started it.
Right.
How'd you get the idea?
Well, it was based on the work that I had had in New York, working with community choruses, bringing people together. But the missing piece of it for me was that when the concerts ended, so did the harmony, so did the kind of togetherness, and everybody went their own ways, especially in New York, which is really hard because people live all over the place. But it was once I had moved to New Orleans in 2005 with this idea of creating the Harmony Project there. Louisiana's my home. New Orleans is very diverse. I thought that maybe this could grow and work there. But then Katrina happened 3 months after I moved there. And it was watching people who were extremely opposed to each other politically and socioeconomically very different from one another. Watching them unite in the tragedy of Katrina, that made me think, so if tragedy can unite us, can music also, can the arts do the same thing? And so the idea was, let's bring all of these people together through something and then empower them to go out in the community and make a difference. And, you know, knock on wood, I don't think there's any actual natural wood in this room, but I'll just knock on my head. Knock on wood. It's grown, it's worked, and then it expanded into the schools, into the prisons, into the supportive housing communities, places where the arts maybe were lacking.
I want to talk more about that as the show progresses this morning.
Sure.
David Brown is, what's your title? Artistic Director?
Creative Director.
Creative Director of the Harmony Project here in Columbus. If you love to sing and you care about the community, then you're going to care about the Harmony Project. And speaking of great arts administrators, I say this every time and she rolls her eyes and she doesn't like it. I'm going to say it again. Janet Chen is the best arts administrator I've ever seen, and I've been around the ballpark a few times. Janet Chen is the Executive Director of Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra, which is different from the Columbus Symphony in what way?
Essentially size and the repertoire that we play. So if you go to the Columbus Symphony, you'll see, you know, upward of 60, 70 plus musicians on stage. Pro Musica, we're a little bit more intimate. You'll see our core of 37, you know, going upward to sometimes 40. But I also think that because of the size, the experience, and again, the type of music that we play is a little bit different.
Well, first of all, you create new music.
We do. In our 46 seasons, we have commissioned 72 new works. And actually, our 72nd will premiere here in the Southern Theater in May for our season finale. And as we look to next season and the future, we have a long list of composers that we really want to work with and help bring their music and their creation to life.
So one can go to your concerts. You can hear Haydn and Mozart and something, but the ink is still wet. Once you don't use ink anymore, but it's still it's brand new. People are just experiencing it, and so everybody gets to sit and hear something for the first time all together, which I think is a real community binding kind of exercise there.
It is, and I think over the years, I think audiences have come to trust Pro Musica when they come to the concert. Yes, you know, there will be some of the tried and true pieces that they're familiar with, but I think even more so now, kind of leaning into what we've been talking about, is that music and art is such an expression of our time today. And so I think our job and responsibility is even more now to help lift up those voices, those sounds, those stories. The commission that I just mentioned in May is actually going to be performed by Columbus native and superstar pianist Aaron Deal.
Yeah.
And he's premiering a piece called Rhapsody by Mike Schachter. And it's basically a modernization on Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, as that piece celebrates its 100th anniversary, if you can believe it.
Yeah.
But really talks about, you know, the sounds of today. When you think about Gershwin writing this piece 100 years ago, it was so out of the box. Mm-hmm. You know, jazz influences in an orchestral setting was never heard of. So really kind of taking that concept and how to modernize that mission in today's music.
That's a fantastic idea. I look forward to hearing that.
Yeah.
Your conductor is David Donsmeyer.
It is.
Who I think he's bicoastal. He's commuting now.
Yes.
He got a gig for himself in Oregon as
well. He's a music director with Oregon Symphony as well.
Tell a little bit about David if people haven't encountered him, because he's magical.
David is dynamic and magical. Yes.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Christopher.
Yeah. Yes, you can hear him, you know, across the street. He is just a force of nature. I feel very, very blessed to work with him and Vadim Gluzman, our creative partner. But David, you know, really over his decade time here has really elevated not just the quality of the orchestra, but he's really just infused this even deeper authenticity of how we present music. It's hard to keep up with him, mm-hmm. but makes it interesting and fun.
I bet you get a lot of 3 a.m. phone calls.
A lot of texts, yes.
Yeah, because he doesn't get the time difference as well.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Let's hear a little bit of Pro Music, and now we have a bit of Mozart Symphony 36 that was performed outside last summer. No, we don't. That was Pro Musica with the Harmony Project.
We have worked together before.
They have. It was so great the first time we wanted to do it again. But I promise later in the program we'll get some Mozart with the Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra. Janet Chen is here. She is their executive director. Edward Cargan is here from the Short North Theater. When did the Garden Theater reopen?
Reopened in 2011 when our founders found that diamond in the rough and got it all together and reopened it as a performance space once again.
And it's been busy ever since. It's such a great location. Yeah. But you could, I know you have the huge marquee. Without that, you could drive by and never know this jewel was there.
We hear that all the time. But yeah, we're right there on 5th and High.
Okay. And now what came first, the theater company or the theater itself?
I think they created it together. Our founders, you know, got a group of folks together.
Peter Yockel?
Yeah, Peter and Rick. They got a group of folks together in the community, and they spent a couple of years trying to organize and get this company together and then get the theater reopened, and they started producing. And I came in about 2 years into their mission there.
We are talking about theater, music, and the Harmony Project, which is all of the above on today's edition of All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy. We're going to take a break. Don't go away.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back, continuing our talk this morning, All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy. My usual gig is every weekday morning from 7 to 10 on our sister station, Classical 101. But a couple of days a month, they let me cross the hall and come over here and talk to you all about the arts and culture in Central Ohio, which I can only do with the help of outstanding artists. And they are, for this program, Janet Chen from Pro Musica, David Brown from the Harmony Project, and Edward Carrigan from the Short North Stage. And I want to talk a little bit about, because I would be remiss if we don't talk about the context of the times we're living in now, which can be divisive and can be challenging for the arts. I don't know when the times are not challenging for the arts, but this may be especially challenging. And David, I think of you a lot. I've been thinking of the Harmony Project a lot because I've heard you say before, as you said earlier, you don't care what people's beliefs are or whatever. You want people to come together and sing and work. And I can't think of a time where that's probably more necessary. But how are you and your memberships coping with what's going on today, whether good or bad?
Sure. Well, I mean, it's a combination of both. I mean, we can look at students, for example. All of our students are immigrant and refugee students. So the trauma that they're going through right now is pretty significant. But they show up and they sing, and that program is actually growing. So I think it's a place to belong. It's a place where they feel safe. 2 years ago, we had 26 kids that started. We now have over 110, 115 kids in that program.
No, what program? Go back a little
bit. So it's our student arts program that Harmony offers every week on Tuesdays. And these students come from Columbus Global Academy and International High School. They've been in the country 2 to 3 years. 9 or 10 different languages among the 100 kids that we serve, English not being one of those languages for most of the kids. So we use music as a way to help them learn their English better and find belonging. But, you know, because of the current situation, we were going to take them to New York City this year. We were going to take them to the UN. We were going to take them to the Statue of Liberty, go to see Lion King on Broadway. But we decided this is not the time to put a bunch of students on a bus and be traveling across the country, because you just don't know what you'll happen. So we had to focus on the safety and security of those students and their families. And so we're keeping everything local this year, staying within a safe space.
I say this with great admiration, as I always do when I think about you and your work. You guys invented DEI before it was a thing. I mean, you were always completely welcoming to everybody. I mean, you all were, but really that was sort of your mission statement.
It is. And, you know, it's, and those words don't even appear on our website, I don't think. But
it was unnecessary.
But now you start to kind of think about it. And, you know, Pete Buttigieg, I don't know if you saw the piece he did the other day where he said, you know, so let's talk about DEI. And he said, so what is the opposite of diversity? What is the opposite of equity? And what is the opposite of inclusion? And that, I think, are questions that need to be asked more and more, because DEI can sound like it's something that's terrible, the way that it's being positioned right now and used, weaponized. But if we think about what the world is without those three things, it's not a world that I want to be a part of. And so I do think there are challenges. I also think that this time offers, kind of like what we're talking about, this opportunity for growth and for people to realize that within the arts is where they can belong, in a place where sometimes they feel like they don't.
Edward, you deal with words and music on the stage. I mean, those are tools for entertainment, for reaching people. Are you expanding your reach? How is that becoming more important as time goes on?
As David said, it's just such an essential time for the arts. So if you love the arts, you have to get out there and support it by buying tickets or donating if you can. But I also think, making sure that our younger generation appreciates the arts. We have this thriving internship program that's completely free to all the kids that work with us. And they get an opportunity to be on stage with New York professionals and look forward to a career in the arts, or just becoming great appreciators of the arts. And I think that's the best tool we have, is teaching a younger generation how essential the arts are to our culture, to our lifestyle, and how it's like an empathy playground, how we show up because it's a communal experience that we enjoy together.
Empathy play. I like that.
That's a good phrase.
That's great. Yeah. That's terrific. And basically, I think what the two of you, and Janet, I know you work with a lot of young people as well, and Pro Musica, you're teaching them to show up, first of all, and really sort of just get in there and do it and work, and giving them a nurturing environment to do that. How am I doing here? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Talk more about, because music is a little more abstract sometimes, but, you know, you do a lot of, you know, you've represented a lot of composers of color. I don't know if we can even say marginalized anymore, but people who needed an extra support.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think really music is for all, right? Music and art is what connects us. It's the conduit for expression. If we think about music that we all enjoy or composers of today are inspired by, that was written hundreds of years ago, you know, you think about the time then and how music and art has remained resilient in times of strife or conflict. And I would think that what we're creating together today in our own institutions is part of what that future would be. And so, you know, again, you know, what what I'll say here is I think we even have more of that feeling that not only for artists today, we need to continue to promote and elevate them, but also, like we said, this next generation of young people who are watching and who are absorbing and who are feeling, you know, that I think is, again, ever more important now than before. So getting into the classrooms, being part of their lives, daily lives, having them feel that they can use music to, you know, create and think about self-expression, and giving them the tools and spaces to create is really also where we're really leaning into focusing on, because we really think that's going to be needed.
Are you having to knock on the doors, kick the doors in, or are the doors open for you in the community?
I think the doors are open in the community. Yeah. I think, you know, Columbus has really had a spirit of openness and willing to listen to each other and lean into what the needs are. But yeah, we've, you know, for us, when we think about outreach and access, you know, we're working now with infants.
Really?
How yeah, long did you... 0 to 3. We're working with early learning centers and going into doing a 20-week session in their classrooms where 20 minutes, but all we're doing is having a musician, and we're building socio-emotional skills, movement, you know, sounds. And I think that's really where we all ideally strive to start, where music starts in your life, and building that to, you know, the audience and those that come to experience what we do every day.
Pro Musica was in business certainly before I got to Columbus, and that's over 30 years. And I think when the Southern Theater opened, what was it, 95, that they really sort of went up the next step, as did many groups, with that venue now available. What is your background, Janet, as a musician and as administrator, and when did you come to Pro Musica?
So I moved to Columbus in 2003. Pro Musica brought me to Columbus.
Where were you before that?
I was before that performing with the Taipei Symphony Orchestra.
Flute.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So I call it my former life. I was a professional flute player, flutist. You know, at a time where really like arts admin or arts management was really not a thing,
right,
for young musicians or artists to really think about as a career path. It was an interesting idea to me. So decided to kind of, you know, dip my toes into this idea of arts admin. So moved here for Pro Musica. I started as the education and operations manager, and then just kind of found my way to where I am now. But, you know, Pro Musica has been supportive of my own journey, but it's been really wonderful to see it grow. And I think even more so now because of my own journey. I didn't have any background in arts management or business or math or budgets. But, you know, when I think about what opportunities were given to me to find my way, again, I think the organization and just personally really committed to helping, you know, that next generation, because we have to look out for each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've said this before, I think that your concerts in the Southern, sort of the big audience concerts, are only part of the story. And so fill in a little more. You started to with the work with the children and the students.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so a lot, you know, obviously we're at the Southern Theater, and then we now have a neighborhood series where we're taking our music into different pockets of the greater Columbus community, doing things at parks and, you know, bars, and doing sessions like that when we're not on stage at the Southern. But really, the programs that we do for the community are really what drives, I think, the pulse in many ways. We have a longstanding partnership with the Columbus Metropolitan Library. We're in all 23 branches, where we do story times for pre-K kids, and we do family concerts a number of times during the year, and they're all free. These are community spaces bringing all ages together to enjoy, you know, programs and stories and music. And we've seen that grow over the years, which tells us that there is that demand, and that's really exciting. So working with students, we have a program with middle school charter schools here called Play Us Forward. We have brought in violins and all string instruments. We have a dedicated instructor that goes into the classrooms to teach, obviously, violin and music, but it's also about helping students develop just skill sets of teamwork and discipline and, you know, also building self-confidence. So we do a lot, well, which is so important.
The one thing that I've always thought about, specifically to the three of you and the work that you do in the community, is you never know when the light's going to get turned on. But you all have the ability to do that, and you've done it. You may not even know. But someone's going to be out there in the audience in a school or in the theater, and the light is going to go on. And he may be 5 years old or she may be 22. It doesn't matter. But
right.
I think that's a great gift of some people who are creative and gifted, as the three of you are. Edward, what's your journey to the Short North stage?
Well, I was a performer, a dancer, like all the Chorus Line characters in New York City for a long time, and then I sort of made my way into directing and choreographing, and by guest directing here in Columbus for the first time, I was just really enchanted by this city and got the opportunity to come and be the first artistic director of the theater, and that was such an awesome opportunity. I couldn't turn it down, and I've been here 10 years now.
What does the artistic director of a theater do?
Well, I think people think it's mostly just picking shows, but that's actually a relatively small part of the
job.
That's
the little fun part.
Yeah,
yes,
sure.
Yes, yeah.
A lot of it is, you know, arts administration, as we were talking about earlier, making sure that our artists feel supported, that they're in a workplace where they have a seat at the table, that they're included in the conversations, to make sure that everybody feels safe in performing and doing what they love to do, but also giving an opportunity to give professional jobs that are paid not only to our local professionals, but guest artists, and then just really encouraging that next generation that wants to do this, as many of us who work at Short North Stage did in our time.
Do you also have kids? You have an internship program?
We do, yeah. The internship program is for high school students who are serious about going into the arts, specifically either in technical theater or in performing.
So they come right into your theater and get to work under supervision, under...
They do. A lot of them are in our shows. They work backstage at our shows. They get special master classes that come through when we have guest artists come in. So it's an opportunity for them to really experience what professional theater feels like. And sometimes that chases them away, which is okay. It makes them lifelong arts patrons. But sometimes it really engages them and then also gives them connections in New York. So when they do go there, they know people and they know how to get around and how to do the audition circuit.
It was for many years the longest running show on Broadway. It won the Pulitzer Prize. It won every prize. A Chorus Line, which you just said is 50 years old, which is abashed because I saw one of the first performances of it and I wasn't a child then. It is running at the Short North Stage through April 19th. It is, are you using... Do you have to use Michael Bennett's choreography?
Like such a unique show. We always try to do original direction concepts and design. But for this specific show, it's an oral tradition that has been passed down from choreographer to dancer to choreographer for 50 years now. Yeah. It's been the same staging that Michael Bennett created in his moment in 1975.
He's not with us anymore, but a number of the original cast are. They turn up on YouTube videos and things once in a while with their grandchildren, but they who all look wonderful, by the way.
They so do, they like, do.
You know? It's a great life. And David Brown, you have a big event on the 1st of May in the Schottenstein Arena. What's going on there with the Harmony Project?
So it's called the Concert for Humanity, and the goal was for us to try to find choral groups, whether they were professional, university, community-based groups, who had similar ideologies about the way they use their music in their communities. And so at the Schott, we will have our 500-voice community chorus. They will be joined by a 200-voice student chorus that is combining kids from very different types of backgrounds. And then we have choirs from Yellow Springs, Dayton, Cincinnati, Cleveland, New Concord,
wow.
41 different counties represented with people in the performance, and a 30-piece band and orchestra, all local musicians. And the whole idea of the night is that if we can start by being for humanity, that if we can find the space where we all agree that the baseline is let's be for our shared humanity, then maybe we can build from there. And, you know, it is designed purposefully for you to feel better when you leave. One of our partners this time is the Ohio State University Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Health, and we're doing surveys of how the music impacted your experience participating in it, how it impacted you by listening to it, the feeling of it. OSU is about to announce a big project that I can't talk about right now because they will be announcing it that has to do with mental health, and we're excited to be a partner in that. And, you know, it's just, it's about bringing people together. I mean, I know as cliche as that sounds, that's what we try to do. And the goal is to, when we get them together, then empower them to then want to leave that arena and go do something after that.
Did I understand you to say that the Harmony Project chorus that you rehearse, I guess, regularly is 500 voices?
Yes.
Where do you rehearse?
At our home, which is the former Northland Performing Arts Center space, up off of Morse Road. So Franklin County Commissioners purchased that property to go along with the rest of their buildings up there, and call it, you know, Divine Intervention, or Cher whispering in my ear. I'm not really sure. I believe she's God, actually. Or she'll outlive God. Or at least parts of her will outlive God.
She should be on your board.
She should be. But we've taken over that space now, and so we use that theater space for all of our programming. We have programs for people with disabilities. We have about 150 people participating in that program, partnering with Goodwill, partnering with ARC, National Church Residences, and then our students are there. And then on Monday nights, that's where the 500 voice chorus.
How many people are helping you do all this?
We have a full-time team of 9, two part-time. We have a great board of directors that's very engaged, involved. And then all of our partners, Columbus City Schools, Franklin County Commissioners, Columbus City Council, GCAC, OAC. You know, I mean, it's the typical folks in our town.
It's the great folks, and God love GCSC and the Ohio Arts Council. God,
right,
you know.
Right.
Also, one more thing before we take a break, and that is, somebody wants to participate in the Harmony Project, and they say, yeah, Dave, I can't sing. I'm tone deaf, so I really can't be there.
I say, welcome to the club.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really about that for us. If you're standing in the middle of the chorus in a rehearsal, I mean, it sounds pretty bad. You know, let's just be real. No, they'll tell you that. The chorus members will tell you that. But you take 10 steps back, 20 steps back. It's a not too subtle metaphor of the community itself, that if we isolate our individual voices, they can sound arrogant. They can sound, you know, bad, full of themselves. But when you step back, those voices get absorbed into the collective voice. And so that's what we're trying to build. We're trying to acknowledge the individual voice, whatever it sounds like, but then build it into something greater when it becomes part of the collective voice.
You can take your voice and you can take yourself to the Schottenstein Arena on May 1st for the Harmony Project's big annual celebration.
Concert for Humanity.
Concert for Humanity. And we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Christopher Purdy. I'm trying very hard to behave here. Thank goodness I have three adults in the room, three professionals in the room. We're talking about the arts and culture in Central Ohio with David Brown of the Harmony Project, Janet Chen, the Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra, and Edward Carnegie with the Short North Stage. All of them are busy. All of them are entrenched in the community and working very hard to make the community better. And I want to go back to Edward for a minute because you're announcing a new season.
Yeah, we're so excited. We just announced our season. Subscriptions are now on sale. We have The Drowsy Chaperone coming up to finish off.
What is that? That sounds terrific.
Oh, if you love musicals, this is a show for you. It's hilarious. It's so funny. And it's about a man playing playing his favorite record of a show from the 1920s, and then it comes to life in his living room. Such a funny show. But going into next year, we start with Waitress. We have Green Day's American Idiot coming. Rocky Horror's returning. The Wiz. We have most ambitious undertaking ever, Miss Saigon next year.
Really?
Yeah, and then finishing off with Spelling Bee. There's one other title in there we can't announce. It's still on tour, but it's an exciting one. Keep your ears open for that.
Great theater in the Short North Stage, and the Garden Theater, which again is where?
It's on 5th and High. Look for that big garden marquee.
5th and High. And Janet Chen, you have a gala in April with Sutton Foster.
We do, yeah. April 11. It's sold out. We have a waiting list, which is a great problem to have.
Yes.
Sutton Foster, beloved Broadway star. Yeah. Thoroughly Modern Millie, I mean, Little Women.
Drowsy Chaperone.
That's a very excited, and, you know, I think many people know a couple times a year we'll bring in kind of a crossover artist. John Batiste was here last year.
That was phenomenal.
Very memorable. Yeah.
He's been here twice now, right?
He's been with Permusica twice now, yes. Yeah. But the last time was two-day residency. Talk about humanity and music.
People love to come to Permusica. They love to perform with you and come to be in the audience, having been in the house. You know, I mean, you know, it's sometimes hard to get a seat. Another good problem to have.
Yes, thank you.
So you have a lot of new work coming. You also have the composers, the Dead White Guys we all love, but you also are encouraging people who are at the beginning of their careers as composers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's make sure composers have careers.
Yes. Yeah. They need orchestras. They need, you know, voices. They need, you know, actors. I mean, anyone who's creating art for the future, you know, I think we need to support them. So.
That's ProMusica. David Donsmeyer is your conductor. Vadim Glutzman is a wonderful violinist, a world-class violinist, has been your creative partner for a number of years as well. And you are at the Southern. Will you be out in the summer doing outdoor concerts?
Yeah, we'll be back at Franklin Park Conservatory. He's been our partner for our free summer music series for over 12 years. We'll be there, and we'll actually also be up in Westerville, the Alum Creek Park Amphitheater. Again, 3 nights of free music. You know, bring your picnic, bring anybody can come, you know, just bring a lawn chair. It's a wonderful time to just experience live music outside.
Pro Musica with Janet Chen and David Braun. Part of the Harmony Project's work has gone into prisons.
Yes,
can we talk about that?
Yep. So after the May 1st concert, which, by the way, over half of the seats at the Shot are free. So if you can't afford to go, you can't afford to go. We've also worked with them to lower the price for parking that night to $10 per car as opposed to $30 per car to try to make it more affordable for families to be able to come. But the prison program started 12 years ago at ORW with a small group of about 65 women who were in a treatment therapy program within the prison. It's now grown to over 200 women that sing in the gym every week. And then the two men's prison programs, 2 years ago, we did something that had not been done in the nation. We brought men's prison residents into a women's prison all together and created something called the Sunflower Arts Festival, named after the Sunflower Hospice Center in Bloemfontein, South Africa, where our women who are incarcerated sing to these children on the other side of the planet.
Well, I remember that, but remind us about how that works.
So there is Kathy Kobacker, the Kobacker family, introduced us to the Sunflower Children's Hospice, children who, you know, their families are unable to care for them because of their needs that they have. Many of these children will likely never move past that hospice center. Some will. And we began singing with them 13 years ago, and then I was fortunate to get to go and meet the children in person and then have a reverse Zoom session where I was there singing to the women here. It's powerful to watch this happen because you see these children who are very still, eyes closed, and the music starts and these women begin to sing and the eyes open and the bodies begin to move. And you realize that something magical, I like to use that word even though it's not magic, but it feels magical that these women who are separated, who are incarcerated, separated from their children, separated from their families because of the crimes, and these children on the other side of the world that are separated from their families and their parents because of illness, they find this kind of common ground and they heal one another while they're singing. That idea then fostered this other idea to grow and like try to bring people from the outside of the prison in. And so 2 years ago, we started the Sunflower Prison Arts Festival. It happens at the Ohio Reformatory for Women. This year, we will have four prisons that are participating at that day. The audience is over 3,000 people that are there on the grounds of the prison. This year, I'm excited to announce that one of our guest bands is going to be Grassinine, which is, you know, Tom Krause's band that does a lot of kind of pop cover tunes, but in a kind of, the way that they do the music, you know. I mean, it's just, you can't even describe it. It's so amazing. But again, it's to shatter stereotypes. It's to bring people in to say, these people who are incarcerated are human beings just like we are. And we don't minimize or diminish the crime. We just accept them where they are. We meet them where they are, and we move and work from that point forward. And that's what the Arts Festival does. And we've got a lot of great community support for it. And if you have any interest in wanting to come to that, we allow public to come in for it and to experience the day, and they leave blown away.
What is the date?
That is June the 3rd.
Okay, I'm going to write that down, June the 3rd. I'm curious to know if you get it, how difficult or easy it was in terms of dealing with the prison authorities to bring performance in, to bring people in. Has it been a challenge? Or
at the beginning, yeah. I mean, I think there was, I mean, there were all kinds of things at the beginning.
Well, there were security issues, first of all.
There was also some homophobia, you know, with me walking into that kind of very good old boy kind of network. But, you know,
Among the administration or the incarcerated?
Not really the incarcerated. Okay. The residents of the prisons are so hungry and so ready for something that they welcome everyone in. And even if there might be some, you know, religious kind of, I'm not sure about this guy or these people, slowly, if you're committed to working with them and showing up and being consistent, and that wears down. And that's another level of growth right there. It's just you don't have to change. I don't ask them to believe that I'm going to heaven. I don't care if they believe what's going to happen to me in the afterlife. But just to build that trust. For many of them, it's the first trusting relationships they've ever had in their lives. And so you see, when we bring in people like, you know, actors, when we bring in classical musicians, it's for the first time in their lives that many of these people are seeing live stage productions, live classical performances. And it's remarkable to watch in real time as actors performing or musicians playing are transforming lives sitting right in front of you, watching shoulders come down, watching clenched jaws relax, watching blood pressure settle down, and watching, as you called it, this empathy playground. That's
perfect.
That's the term for what we all do. You should coin that, and you should put it on a shirt. You should sell
sure
it.
Someone has.
Yeah. Well, you should right now if they haven't.
You know, I think as times get more challenging, the arts become more important, and that's sort of the irony. Maybe it may get more difficult to make art, but it's never been more crucial to do it. So in a way, you all have to work harder to get to where you want to bring us all, but keep going. I mean, who sustains each of you? I mean, who takes care of each of you as these times get
my
more
dog.
Well, that's perfect. You know, that's unconditional love right there, which
it
we
sure
could all
is.
Do a little bit of that. But so are you hopeful? How are we going to cope with the next number of years?
Well, I mean, I don't know, because 3 months ago we didn't know what we were going to be coping with right now. Mm-hmm. But I guess that these two lines that I just keep coming back to, that I even sent to you the other day in an email, it's that arts is not what we fund after humanity is saved. Arts is what saves humanity. And I think we just have to keep towing the line, keep our head down, do our jobs, and remind people that what we do is connecting us to the heart. It's connecting us to our soul, and that we've got to keep doing that. And while our individual areas are thriving, I think we also have to remember that they don't thrive without the public supporting it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we have the ticket tax here in Columbus that really helps support all of us.
Yeah, talk about that, because that was the paper again recently.
Yeah, so when you buy tickets to even sporting events or any arts organizations, you're paying ticket tax, but that goes into grants that we receive from the Greater Columbus Arts Council, and thank God for that, because that's money that ticket buyers are putting into the pool that we all share for grants funding, which is amazing. So that's something that's safe for us to continue to get, right, despite whatever happens with, you know, everything else in the world. And so keep supporting events in Columbus. All of them really help us in the end.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when we think about music and art, it appears in our lives at times when sometimes we don't expect it or anticipate it. And I think art and music has always been on the front lines of, you know, any whatever administration is, you know, in place or whatever is happening when you have a pandemic.
Right.
I mean, and I think, you know, your quote is such a strong reminder that while we are thriving, because no creative person is lacking creative ideas, but I think it's really what we're lacking is, you know, we want people to show up. We want people to show up because that's the way that we, you know, can help connect, bring people together, and be part of a experience that's greater than ourselves. And I personally feel now more than ever is really kind of looking through that lens of not just being in our silos, but, and it's not just collaboration for this word collaboration. It's really that connection that is bigger than who we are.
To build something greater.
Yeah.
What do you learn from your audiences, if that's even a fair question, from the people who are sitting out there in the dark? What do you learn from them?
Well, I've loved in a course on the past couple of weeks just seeing audience members who have never seen the show before. And what they come out with is not, oh, my God, the dancing was amazing, of course, all of that. But it's so neat to hear people talk about their lives. And I think that just watching this show specifically and seeing that everybody, even in this one industry, is so different and comes from such a vast variety of backgrounds. That's an interesting takeaway right now, because I think we need to see each other for what we are and embrace our differences.
Right.
That's what makes an amazing community.
There's the joy of the character in A Chorus Line who just says, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the other one who came, there are probably a lot of broken homes. And, you know, your father was not a nice man. And
the theater is where we all escape to.
That's
right.
Yeah. The theater, and I'm using a wide net, I'm concluding all of you, is where is our safe place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're really, you're sitting there and watching, and you yourself are not being judged, and you're being asked to participate in somebody else's story, which I think is...
It's the social congregation.
Yeah,
you know, it's where you congregate, where you come together, where you belong. It's also therapy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cheaper sometimes, too, than therapy, because you just are able to escape.
Yeah.
And not just escape for the sake of disappearing, but escape into something that stimulates you and allows your mind to grow. And the arts don't belong to either of the political spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
We are right smack in the middle.
You're absolutely right. And nothing that you do is dated. I mean, Chorus Line's 50 years old, but it could have been written yesterday.
Yeah.
With the stories of the young people in that show. Everybody can relate to a lot of what goes on there. Music was glorious 250 years ago, and it's glorious today. We keep hearing it for a reason, you know, because it works.
Right.
And you're also bringing in, I want to emphasize with Pro Musica that you are championing new music, and that's been part of your mission statement since I've known the organization.
Right. And so kind of going back to, you know, what we're doing in May for the finale with, again, this reimagined Rhapsody in Blue, but set in the spirit and context of today, kind of speaks to a little bit of what we're all talking about. The other piece on that program is William Grant Still's Darker America. And, you know, Still's a Black composer who nobody played his music when, you know, he was really at the height of his career. And Darker America brings three themes of hope, sorrow, and prayer. And, you know, there's a lot of that I think we feel today.
Right.
And but that was written, you know, in the 20s. And
Christopher and I were there when it was written.
We were,
in the 20s.
Yes. We talked on the phone. It had just been
exactly.
Invented. You know, Florence Price was dead for 30 years before anybody knew who she was.
Right.
And she's
right.
phenomenal composer.
Yeah.
That's
so
true, too.
Bringing those voices from the past that didn't have a platform is also just as important as promoting the voices of today.
Listen, if you want some empathy, if you just want to have a good time, if you just want to be entertained and be and go somewhere else that may be a little better, go to the Short North Stage, go to Pro Musica, and by all means, go to the Harmony Project. And if you're tone deaf, go sing with them anyway. They don't care. They want to have you participate. They want people in the to be part of what's going on, and you'll be working in the community as well. David Brown, I thank you so much for your continued work and example with the Harmony Project, and we will keep an ear to the ground as you continue your work.
Thank you for giving us the voice.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Janet Chen, Pro Musica, does nothing but bring great music to a wide range of people and a wide range of music. And Edward Cargan, Edward, your work is just all about joy. It really is all about joy and skill at the Short North Stage. A Chorus Line runs through April 19th. And again, it's 50 years old. Wow, that threw me when you said that.
50 years.
50 years ago. It was for many years the longest running show on Broadway, and it could have been written yesterday. It's completely irrelevant. I thank you all. Thank you, Chris Johnson, for making us radio. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. Buy tickets.